And what you should be interested in is understanding how their current situation is impacting them and what results are going to make this a success. And if you understand those pieces, then you can say, you know, I think I have a treatment that addresses that. And then you never show up as someone who's there to sell. You're always someone who's there to solve.
Let's go. Today, we welcome to the show Ian Altman from IanAltman.com. Ian is a speaker, a best-selling author, a podcaster, and a strategic advisor to CEOs. Ian helps his clients discover how to become outrageously successful at targeting and winning business by teaching them how to flip the buyer-seller dynamic on its head, regain control of the sales process, and earn the role of trusted advisor so they can dramatically grow their revenue. Ian, let's learn how we can grow revenue in a way that everyone can embrace. Welcome to the show.
Ryan, thanks so much for having me here.
Hey, I am excited to have our conversation. But first, before we dive into it, I want to start off with maybe a softball question today that has absolutely nothing to do with sales. But if you could vacation in only one place for the rest of your vacation days, where would you go?
Oh, man. You know what? There's a lot of places. I've had the good fortune of traveling all around the world. I love the time I spent in Aruba. We just came back from a trip not too long ago down in Mexico to this area called Nuevo Vallarta, which is like a new part of Puerto Vallarta that I didn't think I would really love. And we absolutely thought it was amazing. It was like a 700-acre property that was fantastic. So there's a lot of different places around the world. That one, surprisingly, I didn't think would hit the list, but right now it's top of mind.
All right. Puerto Vallarta. I've not been there. I know people who've been there and have come back and said the exact same thing. They absolutely loved it.
It was it was one of those things where service top to bottom was amazing. 25 different restaurants on premise. It was like we never had to leave the property. We did once or twice, but you didn't need to.
All right, Ian, before you started your current business, Grow My Revenue, you founded two companies, a software company and a consulting company. Which one came first?
Well, so the consulting company came first. We started that one in 1993. I started that one in 1993. We became a Fast 50 company, so one of the 50 fastest growing companies in the Washington, D.C. area by 1998. And we started a software company because we realized that clients were asking for something that they all had kind of the similar need, and there wasn't software out there in the marketplace that fit that need. So we built something and then grew both companies together.
So somewhere in there, as you're building these companies, you developed a passion for sales. Do you think sales have always come kind of natural to you, or is it something you had to develop along the way?
You know what? I mean, I'm fortunate in that I think through my parents, who weren't in sales, but had just a certain empathy about how they communicated with people, it always came relatively easily to me. Now, having said that, I also was fortunate that early on I worked for some companies that provided some high structure around sales education. So I understood a disciplined process to follow for sales, which is something that a lot of people just haven't had the benefit of. And so it seems like this very challenging endeavor that, man, I could never learn, but it's just like any other skill.
Yeah. Well, you've written two books to help people develop that skill, one called Upside Down Selling and the other called Same Side Selling. And I'm wondering, you know, as you were writing your books and maybe even if you go back to your days when you were, running your companies, how have you seen the sales process in general change over time?
Well, it used to be that the salespeople had a ton of information that the consumer couldn't get without them. And what that meant is that if you wanted to get the latest product information, years ago it was, look, you would get a catalog. And guess what? As soon as the catalog was printed, it was out of date. So if you wanted to get all the information that a company had, you had to put up with that salesperson, like it or not. Today, our clients probably have more information than we do. So the role of the salesperson is no longer, here, I'm the conduit of information. The sales professional's job, or their role, if you will, is now to help the client determine is there a good fit between what they need and what that vendor provides. And so they're much more required to be subject matter experts than they are to just be disseminators of information.
Your book is titled Upside Down Selling. So that kind of implies that there's a quote unquote right side up selling process. Can you compare and contrast the two?
Well, so the traditional salesperson feels their job is to convince the client that they need whatever it is that they're selling. So whatever the salesperson's selling, gee, my client needs it. They just haven't figured it out yet. And the notion of upside down selling is more, look, I want my client to convince me that they have a problem that's worth solving, that they would actually spend money to solve. And if they're serious enough about solving that, then it's worth my time to evaluate whether or not we can help. And so what it does is it flips the roles so that your customer is doing more of the convincing of you rather than you convincing them. And this is not like some Jedi mind trick or deception or coercion. Instead, it's very much integrity based. It's about only trying to work with people where you can have a dramatic impact for them. And if you can't, it's just not a good fit right now.
Do you think that's probably where you see some of the maybe the most common mistakes to people who are new at selling? You kind of think that's maybe where they are making those big mistakes?
Well, you know, I guess one of the biggest challenges that people face. So let's say you're somebody who's just starting out in a sales role, maybe you've been working at a company for a while and now you're starting your own thing. There's a couple challenges that people face. The first is that you get so attuned to whatever your product or service is that you focus on the attributes of that product or service rather than focusing on the problem that it solves for your client. So what you really need to know is why would people need whatever it is that I'm offering rather than what is it that I'm offering? Because it doesn't matter. Like, for example, you take something as ubiquitous as a cell phone case. Well, if people weren't dropping their cell phones and they were breaking, no one would be selling cell phone cases. So if you say, oh, I get this cool cell phone case, if they don't know somebody who's dropped a phone and broken it, you're never selling a cell phone case. But now they're ubiquitous. Everyone's got one because, man, I don't want my cell phone to fall apart. And so that's that side of it. The other side that's very challenging for people when they start out is when you're selling, it's very easy to get caught in a cycle where you feel like it's all about rejection. Man, everyone I reach out to, I just get rejected. They're not interested. And if you change the mindset just a little bit that says, look, my goal is to see who I can have the greatest impact for and who's the best fit. So if I meet with somebody and we determine it's not a good fit, there's no rejection there. We just determine that it's not a good fit. And that's okay. Because most of the people you meet are not going to be a good fit. So when it happens, it's not like, oh my God, this is awful. It's just, you know, just the way it goes.
I've talked to a lot of people who are just getting started out, and a lot of them, when you ask them, you know, what they do, they focus a lot of their answers on here's my product. This is my service that I offer. And they don't really focus on what the customer actually needs. For those folks, where would you recommend they start to actually begin to look at what their customers might need or what problems they can help them solve?
Well, one of the ways that we look at it is there's a concept that a buddy of mine, Bob London, refers to as the elevator rant. And the elevator rant is kind of the upside down version of the elevator pitch. And we describe it a little bit differently, but he's the one that labeled the term elevator rant. So I always give him his due on it. And the idea is that the way I describe it is you get on the elevator and instead of your elevator pitch, which most people would describe as, yeah, it's a 15, 20 second spiel about what it is that you do. The elevator rant is your ideal client and someone else from their organization gets on the elevator right as the doors are about to close. And they spend the rest of the ride up to the 30th floor complaining about something that when you hear it, you think, man, these guys are so lucky to be on the elevator with me because I can fix this better than anybody in the world. And so, you know, if you were an oncologist who had some new drug discovery around some very specific, you know, this XYZ cancer. The elevator rant you would hear is someone comes on and says, man, I was just diagnosed with XYZ cancer and there's no treatment out there. I don't know what I'm going to do. Then you'd be like, oh, wow, I've got the perfect treatment for that. So the elevator rant usually doesn't mention your treatment or your service or product. The elevator rant is often somebody either complaining about what they're getting from their existing vendor, or it's them complaining about a situation in their business that they don't even know there's a solution for it. But if they found one, boy, would they be appreciative. Hmm.
One of the things you talk about in your book, Upside Down Selling, is that during the selling process, there's two things that you should be paying attention to, listening and asking questions. Which do you feel is more important of those two?
Well, they go hand in hand. So it's not like listening is more important than asking questions. And the reason I say that is, if you ask bad questions, then you don't have to really listen to the answer because it's not going to tell you much. Now, so if given a choice, I'd rather you be a great listener, but it's the questions that you ask. For example, when your client says to you, oh, we have this one issue that isn't going well for us, your question should be, So what happens if you don't fix it? Because what you want to know is the consequence of that issue sufficient to warrant your time? And if not, then why are you even showing up? Like, why would you help somebody come up with a solution to a problem that they don't think is worth solving? It doesn't make a lot of sense. So the first thing we want to be convinced of is, do they have a problem worth solving? And if they do, then let me put my thinking cap on and see if I can help them solve it.
Yeah. Is it possible to actually, quote unquote, solve a customer's issue too soon?
It is, because what you want to think of is this, is that the trap that many people fall into is, if you think of it like a medical scenario, if let's say you walked into the doctor and your elbow was hurting, you said, yeah, my elbow's kind of hurting. And the doctor says, oh, come in next Tuesday for tennis elbow surgery. You'd run out of the office because you're like, well, wait a minute. I just said my elbow's hurting, and you immediately jump to treatment. And as the patient or as the client, we want to be part of that diagnosis. So if you jump to whatever you're selling too quickly, then it becomes transparent that you're disinterested in the sale. And what you should be interested in is understanding how their current situation is impacting them and what results are going to make this a success. And if you understand those pieces, then you can say, you know, I think I have a treatment that addresses that. And then you never show up as someone who's there to sell. You're always someone who's there to solve.
Another thing you talk about in your book is that you refer to three things that kind of matter the most when you're qualifying a customer's problems: and issue, impact, and importance. You touched on issue a little bit already, and I think we just kind of scratched the surface on impact. How does impact actually play a role in the sales process?
What it comes down to is that your client might have an issue. So let's say that you're someone selling some sort of IT service. You're selling. Let's say you're selling somebody some sort of marketing service. And so they come to you and they say, yeah, you know, here's this issue I've got where, you know, I'm really having trouble. Our brand isn't that great. You know, people don't really recognize our brand. You say, okay, well, what happens if you don't solve that? Well, you know, it makes it harder for us to sell stuff. And then what happens is our competitors start getting business that we're not getting. And what I want to do is I want to quantify that. And I want to say, well, how much business do you think you're actually losing? I mean, if your brand was better, how much more business do you think you would get? Because if I can quantify that, then I have, if you think of a scale, now I have the value of not solving this on one side, and I have the value of whatever I'm selling on the other side. And as long as what I have costs less than what they perceive the value of not solving it, I've got a pretty good value proposition. If I don't get to impact and I can't quantify it, then it always seems like it's too expensive. So I want to make sure I have something to compare it against, because then it gives me something valid to actually have a discussion about. Now, the difference in impact and importance is impact is often the quantifiable impact of not solving the problem. Importance is the relative importance of solving this issue. And it's often as simple as asking the question, so compared to other things on your plate, how important is it to solve this issue right now? And the client might say, oh, it's really important. Really? Why? Oh, because if I don't solve this, I'm going to lose my job. Well, now you know this is a top priority for them.
People buy from people they know, they like, and they trust. One of the things that you refer to in your book is this concept of a trusted advisor. Is there a difference between a trusted advisor and a salesperson, especially when it comes to, say, somebody who's just getting their business off the ground and they may be the only person who works in the business?
Yeah, I mean, the reality is this, is that, and this is a tough thing when somebody is just starting out. The toughest thing when somebody's starting out is to walk away from a piece of business, because you're thinking, man, these guys have money to spend, you know, and they think they want to spend it with me. And your job is to make sure that you can actually address the issue they're facing, that you can resolve the impact to them, and you can deliver the results they need. And if you can't, they're going to end up being a toxic client that isn't going to work out well. So that discipline is to truly be seeking out all the risk factors that might make this not succeed. Now, there's an interesting dynamic. On my podcast, I had Mark Bowden on, and Mark is one of the foremost experts on body language and communication. And this is a guy who advises, you know, prime ministers and G8 leaders on how to communicate and how to present. And one of the things he said is, look, you know, our unconscious brain tends to categorize things. So if you show up as someone who's exhibiting behaviors of a salesperson, then someone says, ah, traditional salesperson, someone I don't trust, someone I don't respect, and I got to keep an arm's length relationship with. If you start asking questions like a buyer or like an executive that says, well, what would make this not succeed? What are the different risk factors that together we can figure out so that we make sure that we're successful? Then you actually start sounding like a project manager. You start sounding like their advocate. And the reality is that it's in everyone's best interest for you to do that, because if the client is successful, if you help them be successful, they're likely to tell some of their friends. And if your project is unsuccessful, then they'll tell people they've never even met before. So we need to make sure that we're positioned for success.
Okay. How does storytelling play into the sales process, or does it at all?
It does in a big way. And part of it is how the human brain reacts, because when we hear stories, it gets stored in a part of the brain that actually, it's almost like we experience it firsthand. And the other side is that if I use a third party story, then it makes it a little bit less confrontational with the client. So for example, let's say I was talking to a client and the client is, you know, they're looking at, some, you know, someone's helping them with social media. And so the way they're doing it right now, they've got kind of their own homegrown stuff and it's not working real well. Well, I could either say to them, look, you got homegrown stuff. And so you might be spending a lot of time and effort, but you're not really getting results out of it. And the client says, no, we're getting results, because otherwise, you know, they have to defend their own turf. What if instead you said, you know, it's interesting because we were talking to one of our clients and they had said that for months before working with us, they thought they had this thing under control. They thought that in doing this in-house, they were getting great results. And only after they started working with us did they realize that wasn't the case. How common do you think that is? And the client will say, oh, man, we're probably in the same boat. But if you say it about them, they get defensive. But if it's a third party, they go, oh, yeah, it's just like us.
So storytelling kind of helps them visualize themselves in that position versus you saying you're in that position.
Yeah. And it makes it a little bit different. So it's kind of like if you're having lunch with your friend and your friend chews with their mouth open and you're like, man, how do I say this? You can say, you know, it's funny. I used to, you know, every time I was, I would go out, man, I thought I was fine. And then my girlfriend said, man, you're always chewing with your mouth open. How many people do you think that happens to? Your friend's probably going to say, do I chew with my mouth open? Yeah, you do. But that's not the point of my story. Right. And you just kind of, you know, you just kind of open their eyes to it, because now it's not about them. It's about you.
Yeah. I have that friend, by the way. Touched a little bit on this, but when you're getting started out, you have this tendency to cast this wide net. You want any and every customer that you can find. And so in a way, even though your business may be specialized, you kind of cast yourself as a generalist. Is it better to be a generalist initially, to cast a big net to get people in, or should you be a specialist and focus in on what you do best?
Well, what I would say, I mean, it's, and this is going to be no surprise to people, when's the last time you referred somebody to a great generalist? It just doesn't happen. So no one says, oh man, you got to meet this person. They are like mediocre at 27 things. You got to call them up, because they, if you've got one of those 27 things, they will definitely be at least average. I mean, it's not going to happen. What you want is the person who is the specialist in working with CEOs of technology companies in social media, where the CEO and two other executives are left-handed. Because when you find those people, they go, wow, you guys were made for us. And it just, it makes it so they say, wow, you're just like us. And it sounds counterintuitive, but when you're struggling, you're actually better off going deep in a focused area rather than spreading yourself broadly. And also recognizing, where do you add the most value and focus there? And where you don't add a lot of value, it's just not your thing. Let someone else do it. Mm.
Yeah. One of the suggestions you have in your book that I think is really, really good, which is when you're getting started, to go and to make a list of the different problems that you solve and stick to that list.
Yep. Absolutely. So you'll come up, and most people, if they go through that elevator rant exercise, you'll find that you come up with 6 or 7 different ones. And then you go to meet with a potential client and you think, what are the two or three of those six or seven that are most likely to resonate with that person. And then we follow something in same side selling called the same side pitch, which follows the formula of entice, disarm, and discover, where you entice interest by sharing problems that you solve with extraordinary results. You disarm the notion that you're just there to sell something by acknowledging that not everyone's the right fit for you. And then you trigger a discovery phase to learn more about their situation to see whether or not you might be able to help.
Hmm. And I would also imagine the more specialized you become and the more you stick to those same problems that you can solve, you probably are going to have a much better chance of getting referrals to new clients, which is another thing that I hear about a lot, which is I just don't seem to get a lot of referrals.
Yeah. Well, and the referral side is this. The way most people ask for referrals says, hey, Ryan, listen, do you know anyone else I should talk to? And what you don't realize you're asking is you're saying, hey, Ryan, listen, can you give me the names and numbers of people I can harass? And then they'll hate me and they'll be pissed off at you for making the introduction. I mean, that's kind of like that's the undertone of what you're asking. Now, if instead, if you worked with somebody and you said, hey, so when we started this project, here was the problem or issue you were facing, right? And say, yeah, okay. And here's the way we're going to measure success of that, correct? Yes. So 0 to 10, how well do you think we accomplished that? The client says, wow, man, it was a 10. You guys really did great. Okay. Can you think of one or two other people who might be in the same situation you were in who would appreciate being where you're at today? Now, you're begging. You're saying, who else do you know who would like to see the same results that you've had? Now, if you haven't delivered any results yet, that's tougher to do. But even then, your issue becomes, look, here are the types of challenges that we're good at solving. So if you know someone facing one of these challenges, man, I'd be happy to talk to them to see if we can help.
Yeah. And at the same time, isn't that a perfect opportunity as well to ask for a testimonial if you've delivered the results that they expect?
Oh, absolutely. Hey, would you be comfortable sharing that story with other people so they can learn from your experience?
When you're first getting started out, you may only have one client or two. I assume you can follow the exact same process, even though you don't have lots of different clients, to get that testimonial so you can put it on your website or put it on, you know, your Google Plus page or wherever it is that you think it adds the most value, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And the whole idea is that you always want to start with that. So 0 to 10, how do we do? Because if they're a 6, they're probably not ready to be a reference yet.
I want to switch gears on you a little bit now. I want to talk about your podcast,
okay.
Grow My Revenue, the business cast. Can you tell me what's it about and who are the people that you generally speak to?
Yep. So what we focus on is selling innovation leadership. And so we're now into our second season, pretty well into the second season. We're at about episode 60 or so. And I've had everybody from Seth Godin and Jay Baer and Michael Port, a lot of really, really bright people sharing their views about innovation or sales, marketing, leadership. Other people who, like me, deliver a lot of keynotes around sales. And it's, the idea is that we have a consistent sequence that we go through. So every fourth episode is a solo episode where I'm just talking about specific challenges that people have asked me about from a sales side and how to overcome those. So it's very, very instructive in that sense. The other side can be everything from, okay, how do you deal with setbacks in your business and how do you overcome those issues? It could be, what are the biggest mistakes people are making from a marketing standpoint or with social media? It could be misconceptions about marketing and permission, but it really runs the gamut and it all comes from my listeners. So I'm constantly asking them, what topics would you like to cover? Which guests would you like to have on? And that's how we end up filling our roster.
Yeah, it's a very good podcast, by the way. I listen to it fairly regularly. You know how podcasts get, they kind of stack up if you can't stay on top of them. how often does it release?
Every single week. So we have one episode a week. So every crack of dawn on Monday, there's a new episode that's out. And it's always neat when I get somebody who tells me about how they've been binge listening. And someone will say, oh, man, we were on a road trip. And I listened to 12 episodes straight. And I'm thinking, that's a long road trip.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's funny because there was a guy I met at an event, and he's there with his family. And so the dad comes up and shakes my hand, and says, oh yeah, and I've got my kids here. And I just said, oh hey, it's a pleasure to meet you. And the son, who's like 8 years old, goes, that's the guy in the car. Right? Because like this poor kid, I'm thinking he's listening to it on headphones. No, he's got it playing through the car, and his kids have listened to this. I'm like, oh, the poor guy.
That's funny. What do you think with your podcast through the 60 episodes, what do you think you have learned the most, or maybe what's the biggest kind of aha moment that you've had when you're either talking with your guests or, you know, do it in your solo show, something that kind of stands out and you go, huh, I wouldn't have gotten that had I not been doing this podcast.
You know what? There are so many things. I think that there are certain guests, like when I had Seth Godin on, there were times where I forgot that I was the guy doing the interview, and he would say something and I was like, wow, that's really cool. Oh, wait a minute. I have to ask another question now. I'm actually part of the interview. I thought I was a spectator. And the biggest thing is that no matter how much we think we know, I learn something new every single episode, even the solo episodes where all of a sudden I'll put something together. I'm like, wow, I hadn't thought of it that way before. And I think to myself, well, who else was on here? Because that was a pretty good idea. And it certainly didn't come from me. And it's usually just the way someone asks the question. It gets me to think about things a little bit differently.
Wow. I go through that same thing with this podcast as well. It's definitely been an accelerator of personal development and growth for me.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, I absolutely love it. The thing that's most rewarding, we developed this improv game, this game called Same Side Improv. And I love getting feedback on that because it's all about how do you role play for real live sales situations. And so it's a series of playing cards that in essence make it so that every time you're in a role play, it's a little bit different. And there's a whole category of cards called secret cards, which is the stuff that your clients don't tell you about that you know exists. Things like they're trying to leverage their existing vendor. They don't trust vendors. They've unsuccessfully tried to implement something similar in the past. They don't think they need it. I mean, there's a whole litany of these. And what I love is getting those emails from people that say, man, we went out and met with a client. It was just like we had rehearsed, and we knew which secret cards they were holding. Like, of course, when you meet with a client, you don't hand them cards, but it's just what they mean is, look, I rehearsed it enough that I could tell what was going on, even though they didn't say it. And so that's very rewarding. And it just came out of people saying, asking me, hey, well, do you guys have something that, you know, how do I role play stuff? And I, well, there's got to be a tool out there. And we searched and there wasn't anything. So we built one.
You know, what's very interesting about that is that for your answer just then, I became a spectator because it's almost like you were reading my notes, because the very next question I was going to ask you was about the Same Side Improv game.
Well, you know what? My skills of clairvoyance have really picked up by doing the podcast. That was the other big tip, I guess.
Well, I tell you what, Ian, for those who are interested in picking up a deck of the Same Side Improv card game or either one of your books, Same Side Selling or Upside Down Selling, what are some of the best ways for them to get in touch with you?
Easiest way is just at Ian Altman. So ianaltman.com is the website. My Twitter handle is Ian Altman. And you know what? People can email me. They can email me at ian@ianaltman.com. And you'll actually get a response from me, not someone who works for me. By the way, you might get an email back from someone who works for me if I'm traveling or speaking somewhere and they'll say, hey, look, Ian's away from his machine right now. He's speaking at an event. So I just want to let you know that he will get back to you. So that way their message doesn't just sit there in the ether. But I respond to all of them. And as long as I can still do that, I will continue to do so. And at some point, I imagine that might change. But for now, I really enjoy taking the time to respond to everyone's emails when they send them.
Any final thoughts, words of wisdom, or tips you want to pass on to any of our just getting started or even people who've been selling for a long time?
Yeah, you know what? The biggest thing I would say to them is, you know, never be intimidated by the big guy, because they probably can't be as responsive as you. And if you know uniquely what problems you're best at solving and you focus just on those people where you can have the greatest impact, you will never feel like you're selling. You'll always feel you're operating with integrity, and you'll actually be able to approach those clients in a way where they appreciate not only what you offer, but how you're approaching them, because it's all in the spirit of how do I help you instead of how do I sell you something. And once you cross that hurdle where you're not selling, but instead you're solving or helping them get a better outcome, you'll feel great about what it is you do. You'll have amazing success, And if someone asks you, how good are you at selling? You'll say, I'm terrible at selling. I mean, my business is growing huge, but I'm not a good salesperson, because you're not going to see yourself as a seller.
All right, Ian, I personally am terrible at selling, but thank you for taking time out of your day today to give us a lot of tips and words of wisdom to help us all become better salesmen.
My pleasure, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
Okay, I need to let you all in on one more little secret. Like Dave Chesson last week, Ian and I recorded this show nearly 7 months ago. And since I explained the reasons for this last week, I won't go into detail about it again, other than to say, Ian, I apologize for the delay. But here's another little secret about this show. During the recording of this episode, we had so many technology-related issues that I wasn't even sure if we'd ever get this one recorded. I mean, you name it, it happened. And today's show is actually the sum of four separate recordings over two different days. Ian's patience was as outstanding as his advice on today's show. And as I reflect back on the show, what I really loved about it was this notion of solving problems versus selling a product or a service. Approaching your business with this mindset can be life-changing. So whether you're a business executive, a career coach, or a recruiter, take a second and think about the problems you solve for your customers. In fact, take an hour and list them all out. What problems do you solve, and where can you have the greatest impact? Once you have this list written down, start focusing on solving just those problems. Yes, this might mean turning down a new client, passing on a new role or position, or turning down a candidate for a position in which you know they will struggle. Remember, we're all businesses of one, which means we are selling something. We just may not know it yet. So focus on solving problems, not selling a product. And as Ian said, you'll always feel like you are operating with integrity. Thank you, Ian, for sharing your story and for all of your great advice on how we can all do some upside down selling. And of course, thanks to those of you listening in today. You can find all the show notes and the links to everything Ian and I discussed over on the blog at ryanroten.com/Ian Altman. Oh, and don't forget, the book Career Cred is now officially out in the wild this week. If you're looking to get recognized for your expertise and build up credibility in your career, this is the book for you. I'd love it if you'd not only pick up a copy for yourself, but maybe gift one to someone you know who might need to read it as well. And if you've already purchased a copy, thank you, thank you, thank you. Don't forget to go back and leave a rating and review. Last thing, I started a vlog. And I'm not going to lie, it's very hard to be consistent. There are so many things that get in the way of that consistency when it comes to a daily vlog. That said, I can tell you that I really enjoy the creative process, and I will continue. So if you're interested in learning more, go to CareerCred, that's cred with a K, K-R-E-D, careercred.tv. Take a look and subscribe. That wraps us up for today. So until next week, I've been Ryan, and I'm out. This week's show was edited and produced by Ryan Roten. The transition music is called Mexican Mariachi 2 by Jingle Republic. And the intro and outro music, as always, is Pulse by Soundrope.